Good morning. We are, as Charity reminded us, as Ruth said last week, we are here today on this winter solstice, the longest night and the shortest day of the year. Ruth's talk was about chasing light last week, and that's what many of us tend to do as we think about the shortest day. We're looking forward to our daylight returning to us. In the winter, even just the slightest glimpse of some blue sky and sunshine is enough to kind of like, oh, okay, we haven't died. It's not gone yet, right? But we carry a lot of that. But rather than chasing light, I would say that this week, if we were going to talk about something, rather than focusing on the arrival of more light, I want to sit with the darkness and I want to honor the season. I want to contemplate what the darkness is asking us to sit with in this season instead of just plowing ahead. We, as human beings, dislike uncomfortable situations and pain. And when they happen, and when we find ourselves in difficulties, our tendency is to want to exclude or push away that pain and move towards healing and hope and restoration. And that's very natural. But for centuries, for millennia, human culture has taken their cues from the rhythms of nature. Winter solstice is the day of Yule. It's the birth of the solar new year. Many cultures honor the sun and revere the arrival of more daylight, but while it is still the shortest day, it is also the longest night. And that is something to sit. Often we hope that the darkness will end and that light will begin. But we must accept the darkness in ourselves, and we must accept the darkness in others. And the season of winter solstice invites us to sit with the darkness within, to explore the shadow, to not ignore it, while still holding hope that the light will return. The darkness is the perfect opportunity for regeneration, for rest, for renewal. It's ironic, isn't it, that our capitalistic culture has given us this Christmas season, and along with it comes the unspoken contract that we will ramp ourselves up more and more and more up until December 25th. And it almost feels like we're on this treadmill and somebody is just like, without looking, just slowly turning it up a notch at a time. And we're running, we're panting, and it's like, is this thing going to slow down? No, it's going faster. And culture tells us, move faster, bounce around. If anything, this is probably one of the busiest times of the year as far as planning things for many people, because you've got holiday parties and you've got to plan when you're going to see family and which family and have you gotten that present yet? All the running, all the hectic nature. And yet, when you compare that to nature, which we are of this earth, we are human beings from this planet. And when we look at this planet, when we look at the rhythm and the nature of that nature gives us, we see that no, during this season, this is the season when things slow down. Some animals even hibernate. Their heart rates slow down fractionally until it's barely keeping them alive. And it looks like death is on the doorstep. But it's not the end. It's just a period of hibernating. It's this season of wintering. This solstice is our personal awakening. In the spring, we clean our houses, And in the winter, we clean our minds. We sit with what this season is asking us to sit with. I have an odd job compared to many when I get asked about what I do, even before when I was pastoring. It's still not a super relatable position to anybody other than maybe teachers, because I'm standing up in front of a room full of people, week in and week out, dozens of times a year, talking and communicating, and hopefully not talking just about abstract ideas, but relating it to day-to-day life, or at least I hope that that's what I try to do. And I've been speaking in front of people for years, and when I have in the past had seasons or periods of time where I was not my best self or not feeling fully well, fully there, feeling the joy of the season, there's a couple of choices. One is to put on this happy face and to communicate, to pretend that it's not there, to banish the darkness away just by bringing in so many more other distractions. And I'm really good at that. I've told my therapist that I have this ability to compartmentalize with the best of them. And when I tried to relay an example of what it was like, I used the illustration. I said, do you remember at the end of Indiana Jones in the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they take the Ark and then they're wheeling it into the warehouse, and then you see the lights come on and you see these long rows and all these boxes hammered shut that hadn't been touched for years? I said, that's what it's like up here. Like, I can just put it in a box, hammer the nails down in that box, keep it on a shelf, and as long as it stays on the shelf, you don't have to think about it. Or I can own those seasons and I can talk about them honestly. And in a spiritual community, I think that's what we try to do, is we try to bring our authentic selves. And so I can honestly say that I'm not as well this season as I would like to be. And this isn't a season, or this isn't a feeling that is unique to me, because we know that in our culture, statistically, this season is especially dark, not just in terms of the daylight that we have, but in terms of the mental health and the things that we carry into this world. An alternative title for this morning's talk that would have been a little bit less uplifting was The View from the Bottom of a Dark Pit. As I was going to try to explain and give you a picture of what depression feels like when you're in the middle of it. Brené Brown talks about sympathy versus empathy, and there's even a little web video that uses the example of a person who's fallen down into a pit. Sympathy is the person who, you know, looks pretty dark down there. That's pretty bad. I'm sorry you're down there. And empathy is getting a ladder and climbing down in the pit and sitting with that person. The first thing is, when you're thinking about the view from the bottom of a dark pit, especially in light of this season of reduced daylight, increased darkness, is that oftentimes when you're in the pit, it's very lonely. And the light that you see is either at the top of a long tunnel, or it's whatever light you brought with you. Ruth spoke last week about tending the light for yourself and being a light tender, a light holder for others. She said how in some cultures, that was a sacred task to tend the light. And I think for each and every one of us, we each carry that sacred responsibility of nurturing our own light. But it's okay to acknowledge that in some seasons, it's harder than others to carry that light. I know that many of you are familiar with the complexities of mental health. If you have not faced it yourself, chances are you either have a family member or a close friend who has dealt with these complex issues. According to the latest national data, nearly one in four, 23.4% of adults in the U.S., have experienced some form of mental illness in the past year. It's over 60 million people. And among young people ages 12 to 17, 11.3% have experienced a major depressive episode in the past year. That's described as something that involves severe impairment. I can think of examples of times when you can't go and do the things that normal life asks you to do. That's what a major depressive episode looks like. It means not being able to get yourself either out of bed, out of the house, carry on with normal life. 1 in 10 of our young people are experiencing that. 29% of U.S. adults reported having been diagnosed with depression at some point in their life, nearly 1 in 3. And about 18% have currently or in the past have been treated for depression. Neil Brennan, who's a comedian, he describes depression in a way that I thought I would visualize for you. I have this hyper vest, which is a weighted vest. Has anyone ever seen or used one of these guys here? There was a period of time where I was doing a lot of Spartan races, which are these obstacle course races. And believe it or not, at one point I was, this is I think about 30 pounds. So they've got these little, there we go. And then you zip it up, you got these little lead weights in there. And if you've ever had the opportunity to train with one of these, it really pushes your training into overdrive. There was a time where I could do pull-ups and push-ups and burpees all while wearing this vest and then going and running a mile. And when you're carrying a vest like this, the funny thing is it's crazy how quickly you adapt to the weight. And not only do you adapt to it, but you try to adjust your life around this. It almost becomes like this default mode that you're reacting to, and so it drives the way that you function. And this weight can be reduced sometimes through medication, sometimes through therapy, sometimes through friendships and conversations. And a combination of those things may help to remove some of these little tabs to reduce the weight. Or it may not reduce it much at all. May reduce it for a period of time. And then you go to put on one morning and realize that it's right back there. If you've ever experienced depression or loneliness in that way, you are not alone. You're not broken. As Charity mentioned, a lot of the stories that we inherit treats the darkness as the enemy, as the bad guy. I mean, let's think of the classic one. Come to the dark side, says Vader, right? The darkness is calling you. We have cookies. And it's easy to fall into the tendency to want to banish the darkness, to want to banish the dark thoughts, to treat darkness as a spiritual failure or a mental or moral failure or something that you're supposed to outgrow. I shouldn't be thinking these thoughts at this time or season of my life. I should be somewhere else. But darkness is not a moral failure. It's not something to get rid of. Sometimes it's just a season that we're in. Sometimes it's neurochemistry. Sometimes it's grief. Sometimes it's all of the above. Dr. Gabor Mate, who writes extensively about depression and mental health in his book, The Myth of Normal, says, "We each carry our wounds in our own way. There is neither sense nor value engaging them against those of others." The darkness looks different for each of us, depending on where we're at, what season we're in, what we're carrying. And perhaps for you, maybe this season is not one that is especially dark. And I'm not asking you to dredge up something to get yourself artificially depressed, even though this talk could possibly do that for you. But it's to recognize that if you are in that season, there is probably somebody carrying that heavy vest that you know closely. And our first tendency is to want to go up to that person and be like, here, let me take that thing off for you. Especially those of us who are very productivity-minded, solution-oriented. Well, have you tried this or this or this? Let me give you a number. Let me give you a book. And the reality is that that person is probably already doing everything they could, if they would, to be able to get that vest off. And that's just not how it works. So what do we do with the darkness? What do we do with the dark thoughts? As Paul Simon said, "Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again." I would encourage you to befriend the dark thoughts, to see what they have to say to you. In a book that has become especially poignant for me through the years, Catherine May's book called Wintering, The Power of Rest and Retreat in Difficult Times. She says, if happiness is a skill, then sadness is too. Perhaps through all these years at school, or perhaps through other terrors, we were taught to ignore sadness, to stuff it down into our satchels and to pretend it isn't there. As adults, we often have to learn to hear the clarity of its call. That is wintering. It is the active acceptance of sadness. It is the practice of allowing ourselves to feel it as a need. It is the courage to stare down the worst parts of our experience and to commit to healing them the best that we can. Wintering is a moment of intuition, our true needs felt keenly as a knife. I especially am drawn to her depiction of this active acceptance of sadness, which would not be something that is easy to sell. Not only do we want to banish the sadness, to make it go away, we pretend that it's not there. And she said, no, it's the active acceptance of this sadness, the reality that life is both light and dark, and that both are necessary, both are essential. Doesn't mean that we like it. It's not asking us to put on this fake facade that says that we're doing okay. But it's this active acceptance of life as it is. To acknowledge the pain in life. As they said in The Princess Bride, life is pain, Highness. Anyone who tells you different is just selling something. It's acknowledging and coming to grips with the fact that life comes with pain, with loss, that these seasons of darkness are a natural cycle of the world that we come from and a natural cycle of our interior life as well. Not something to banish, to exclude, but something to sit with, to talk with. As we learn to, like so many animals, grow our winter coat. When we're heading into the cold, into the darkness, many animals, through generations of evolution, have developed the ability to either put on fat, to put on fur, and to be able to hunker down against the darkness of the winter. And we as human beings are invited to, in that same resilience, Catherine May goes on and says, plants and animals don't fight the winter. They don't pretend it's not happening and attempt to carry on living the same lives that they lived in the summer. They prepare They adapt. They perform extraordinary acts of metamorphosis to get them through. Winter is a time of withdrawing from the world, maximizing scant resources, carrying out brutal acts of efficiency, and vanishing from sight. But that's where the transformation occurs. Winter is not the death of the life cycle, but its crucible. During this season, I've been sitting with a poem from Rumi that has been equal parts encouraging and equal parts frustrating to me. It's frustrating because I wish I could be in the place that Rumi describes. The poem is The Guest House, and it's one of his better known poems. This being human, he says, is like a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a sadness. He says, welcome and entertain them all. Even if there are a crowd of sorrows come to violently sweep your heart empty of its furnishings. Don't despair, he says, because they may be preparing you for some fresh new joy. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, Rumi writes, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. For those of you like me who may recognize the view from the bottom of a dark pit, you know what it feels like to be consumed with grief, with depression, with frustration, with loss. You may recognize these feelings from times in your life where you've gone through transitions that have been especially difficult. The invitation for us that Rumi talks about is that we have a couple of choices. We can try to bar the doors and windows of our hearts and hammer up the boards and batten down the hatches and say nothing is going to get in. And it may work for a season, but that's not reality. We can't banish the dark any more than we can try to cling to more and more and more of the light. Instead, Rumi says, recognize that they are all travel guides. They're all showing up at your door with a job to do, and they're all preparing you for something better on the other side. I'm not going to the extreme of saying that you have to find a purpose in the midst of the loss and the darkness. That's an evangelical culture I came out of that is frankly hurtful and destructive and prevents you from being able to come to grips with the loss. I'm not saying that those things had a purpose, but I am saying that we can find a purpose in the midst of the difficulty. That instead of seeing that fresh depression, sadness, that crowd of sorrows as a band of robbers that is taking away your peace of mind, you instead recognize, well, they're actually the moving crew. They're coming in. They're getting rid of some stuff because there must be something more coming. Welcome and entertain them all. Meet them at the door laughing. As Charity reminded us in her meditation, we can label the night as bad and the light as good, but there's no bad or good. There's these patterns. And you can no more say that the darkness is bad and the light is good than you could say that summer is the only good season, because without the winter, you couldn't have the new growth. So the promise of the light in the season is the knowledge that no matter how dark it gets, no matter what it feels like in the bottom of that dark pit, for your loved one who is in the bottom of that dark pit that you so desperately wish you could reach down and pull them out, to recognize that the darkness does not last forever. The light is coming. But let's sit with what the darkness is asking us to sit with in the season. The season is not meant to be faced alone. The title I landed on is Walking Together into the Dark, because the beautiful thing about this image is that no matter how dark it is for any one of us at any one moment in our life, chances are in your community, in this community, there's somebody else that has been or is being a light tender that can offer you and share that light, share that encouragement. Don't go into this alone. Walk together into the darkness. My encouragement today and this afternoon, and this is not a fun exercise, but it's a practical and a necessary one. We tried to do it a little bit in pre-talk, is to sit with the darkness today, maybe in some silence. If you have any eye shades or anything that you could put on to really embrace the darkness, or if you just wait until, what, about 4:15? To sit in the darkness and to reflect, to embrace this season for what it is, and to say, what is it I'm carrying with me into this darkest night? As I sit in the middle of the longest night, what is it that my heart is most hurting from? Or if you're not in that place, but you know that that person who is, to engage in the practice of tending the light and holding the light for others. Friends, let's walk together into the darkness. Embrace the season for what it is, and learn to see what the darkness has to share with us. Thank you.